Hey everybody, welcome back to the Daily Buddy Pick. I am your host, Liz, and today's topic of conversation is going to be disappointing series finales. Now, I know you guys all have one. You can probably think of one right now that comes basically bounding to the front of your brain visually or any kind of way. And there are so many to pick from, so this might be a multiple part conversation, but I thought about it and thought about it some more, and I thought to myself, you know what? I'm just going to start with the one that probably infuriated me the most. Now, I would like to think that I watch a ton of television shows, like a ton. It's probably one of my favorite things to do next to watching films, but for some reason, there are things about television that just really I connect with. It takes you out of your head, takes you out of reality. It's crazy. I was just reading a quote that was on Facebook earlier, and it was talking about the experience of coming out of a movie theater and realizing you're stepping back into reality because of the atmosphere of the theater. And I honestly can make a connection with that with any type of like visual media, like television or movies. And it just meant a lot to me for some weird reason. I kind of like hit home. And that's why sometimes we can really be affected or disappointed when you feel as though a show kind of lets you down. And it could be for many reasons. It could be a character being written off a show. Spoiler alert, Grey's Anatomy. When Alex left the show promptly and they kind of Shonda Rhimes had to think of a really quick way of basically writing off Karev's character. I mean, it can be disappointing at times. So the first show I kind of want to talk about tonight is, the fabulous show, How I Met Your Mother. Now, I was obsessed with this show for a very, very long time. Like, seriously addicted, like, long time. It ran for 9 seasons. It started in 2005. It had amazing, amazing actors. So, Kobe Smothers, Neil Patrick Harris, Allison Hannigan, Josh Radnor, Jason Segel. I mean, you name it. And then, unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of time with the actual mother, which is Kristen Milioti. I'm sorry if I butchered your name. I usually do that the first day of school with the students too, but it just was a show in its own. A lot of people were comparing that show with kind of a offset of Friends because of the dynamic with three male characters two male characters. Just kind of this original setup of the show, people were claiming that it was a parallel between Friends and relationships. I really didn't see that as much. But, I mean, I could see the comparison, but really kind of digging into this show. The premise of the show basically starts off with Josh Radnor's character, who his name is Ted Mosby, and then there's Marshall Erickson, played by Jason Segel. They are basically just best inseparable buds. And then Allison Hannigan's character, Lily Aldrin, comes into the picture, who is Marshall Erickson's love interest. And there's a really good dynamic arc within that relationship. And it's a good, basically, chemistry, really, between all three. She ends up moving in. She ends up moving out. They end up breaking up. They end up getting back together. It's just basically amazing. So the whole thing starts off with the premise of the fact that Josh Radnor's character, Ted Mosby, is talking to his young children in the future. So basically, the premise of the entire show is a flashback. Side note, it's kind of funny that the kids that played the children were kind of recorded all of their scenes at the beginning, which goes to show the writing aspect of it, that they knew the whole time that the ending of the show, since like the beginning. I mean, I'm hoping that I read that wrong and to think that maybe things were changed to fix things at the end. I don't know. I like to think that because I'm kind of hurt by the ending of the show, but it doesn't really matter. breathe, take a breath. I get passionate when I focus on this topic. But then you have an introduction of Barney Stinson, which is played by Neil Patrick Harris, who comes in and wedges himself into the relationship, not very organically, just kind of walks in and says, "Hey, I'm your friend now. I'm part of the club. Get used to it." And the funny thing is that even though Ted Mosby's character is supposed to be the main character of the show, basically the leading force of it, with a very strong supporting from Jason Segel, Neil Patrick Harris just comes in and just completely takes over this show. Just swoops in and whirlwinds all of it up, and you just madly fall in love with this character. So what ends up happening is Robin Schabowski, who's played by Colby Smothers, ends up meeting Ted at a bar, and Ted instantaneously falls in love with her and spends basically the first season trying to chase her and trying to impress her with all these parties. And so they develop this relationship of an on-again, off-again relationship. And then Ted Mosby has to basically watch the so-called, air quote, love of his life get into a relationship with Barney Stinson. And then they get together. And it's kind of an off-again, on-again kind of teasing of a romance, potential romance. And then they eventually hook up, which seems kind of forced. But then you kind of basically kind of start to, they get kind of endearing. They get endearing and you're thinking, okay, this could work. So even though the show was on for 9 seasons, the last season, I like to think, doesn't count because of the fact that the whole entire season runs over the course of one day, which is Rob and Barney's wedding. Robin and Barney's wedding. So what ends up happening is that you don't actually meet the character who is the actual mother, even though the premise of the show is How I Met Your Mother, until the very end of the 8th season. And that is what's kind of what bugs me the most. And it was like a really bad car accident happening in slow motion in front of your face, and you just couldn't stop it. Like, you kind of saw what was coming at you and you were hoping that it was wrong. I mean, and the craziest thing about this is the fact that I was really obsessed with a group of shows that was ending all at the same time around the same time. And I had thought that the 8th season was actually going to be its final season. And I come to find out when I'm watching the very season finale of the 8th season that when it wasn't wrapping up, because I thought to myself, you know, wow, this is a very short time to end an entire series in one episode. And then I come to find out there's a whole other season. And I was emotionally preparing myself for the closure of this show. I was watching it basically on repeat every night while I was going to sleep, while me and my husband were going to bed. It was just one of those things that comforted you and lulled you to sleep. It was something I just absolutely loved. And then the last season started. So the last, spoiler alert, all of the things that I talk about on these podcasts are going to be spoilers, so brace yourself. The last season of the series was based on the premise of everybody was going to have a focus on how they actually met the mother, and kind of a chain of events of six degrees of separation. And so, like, Lily meets the mother on a bus, and, you know, Ted meets her at Robin and Barney's wedding, which was, I guess, had to be forced to be established on how they met. Now, I mean, honestly, they could have met anywhere. The fact that they met at the wedding was not a big highlight or focal point that could be separated. Anyways, they spend the entire last season focusing on how everybody meets the mother. And then the very final episode happened. It just boils my blood thinking about it, honestly. So the premise of it is the fact that they get married over the course of the entire season. Barney has cold feet. Ted has to talk him back into it. There's a search for Robin's locket that was sentimental, which Ted actually end up hunting down and giving to Barney so Barney can claim that he got it to create this romantic relationship. But then it left a door slightly open to give everybody hope on the fact that Ted was still romantically in love with Robin and all this nonsense. And then you're thinking to yourself, okay, even though Ted is eventually, I think, within, I want to say, the second to the last episode, ends up confessing to Robin that he has moved on, even though he technically hasn't, but he makes it very, very believable. I'll be honest, I wasn't really the thrilled with Ted Mosby's character. I thought Josh Radnor did an excellent job, like playing him, but I think some of the writing for him was just too much. He had fallen in love and fallen out of love, had basically been hitting rock bottom with all of his romantic relationships with anybody he dated. So it was really kind of brutal to sit there and watch him supposedly watch the girl that he loved go away. So there was a fight on whether or not Robin was actually the mother. And they hinted back and forth in the last season a couple times, but you knew it wasn't going to happen. You in the heart of hearts, you kind of knew that. So the very last season, when they started to introduce slowly the mother character, they kind of spliced in little snippets of basically the time after they met to basically her demise. And then a little while afterwards, when the children grew older, and then he started telling the story. So the timeline's a little jumpy. You have to follow along with it, or you'll get a little lost. But they hint through the last season that the mother's character actually is sick and is probably going to die. And so, just when you actually get to meet this character and you start to kind of fall in love with this character, you kind of get the impression that they're going to immediately kill her. And that's basically what they did in the very end. So, what was the point of the entire last season when you go into the last season to establish the fact that he finally meets the love of his life? And then what ends up happening? They immediately kill her off, like within 10 minutes of the last episode. Not only that, but the entire last season was also the focus of Barney and Robin's relationship and them getting married. To immediately, 5 minutes into the last episode, get them divorced. I mean, I get it. They built a character arc around Barney being single, being terrified of getting anybody pregnant, you know, not having this huge career, like commitment fear, and the fact that, oh yeah, well, Robin was the one to tame him. And then in the episode, halfway through, Barney's character finds out that he has knocked up a one-night stand and has a daughter, and I will give it to Neil Patrick Harris because I love him and he's an amazing actor. Probably the best scene next to the Suits song was the monologue he had when he first met his child when she was born. Sorry, it gets me a little misty-eyed. It was excellent. It was so beautiful, and it kind of made sense linear-wise, the fact that the only person that could really get him to genuinely fall in love would be his own child. You know, that makes sense because he's never experienced it before. And he had such a hard childhood growing up himself. The fact that they established his final connection with his daughter was a bit of a sweet moment. Probably the only part of the final that I actually enjoyed was that. And so it talks about Robin's arc in the last episode, how she became this reporter that she had fought really hard over the entire series to become, but yet she found out that she wasn't happy. And so she ends up getting kind of drifting away from the pack. And then you've got Lily's character with Marshall, who Lily was a elementary or a kindergarten teacher, and Marshall was a lawyer. And the funny thing is, how could they afford that apartment? Which is a connection to Friends because it was the same problem. I know it was rent controlled, but how could you live in that big apartment on your jobs in New York City? That just boggles my mind. But they end up moving to Europe because Lily ends up seeking her, like going after her career to be an art procurer. Like she picks out art for famous people, basically for rich people. I can't say that word right. I'm an art teacher. I should say that. But so you've got basically everybody kind of going their separate ways, and it shows them kind of fighting to stay together as a family, but yet everything. I think the part that made me the most mad about the finale was the fact that they literally spent less than 30 seconds on the mother's death. It was implemented and indicated, and then all of a sudden she is in the hospital bed and he says this really sweet, sad little moment, and she turns to him and basically, you know, and then it was like a cut to black, if I remember correctly, and then it was just kind of like a stark kind of statement, like, she's gone. She's no longer there. And you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, you never got to get any connection with her. And just when you feel like you're getting connected to the mother's character, who of course is played by the amazing, amazing Kristen Mialotti, she's gone. They write her off. And this girl is amazing. I've seen her in a couple of her things. My favorite thing that she's probably been in so far is I don't know. It's kind of a double-edged sword. Or not. It's like a Sophie's choice between her role in Modern Love, which is a Amazon Prime series that just came out, which is, I highly recommend. It is absolutely amazing. She plays, I won't go into it. I'm going off on a tangent. And the very first episode, I think, of the last season of Black Mirror, where she plays a character that is in a video game that was captured and placed there by her employer who was obsessed with her. Oh my gosh, she is so good. And the fact that they just didn't utilize her talents or give her enough time to really get connected with the audience just made me mad. It made me so mad. And then to top it off with a nice little cherry on the cake, the very last scene that you see is it goes into how he says, and that, kids, is how I met your mother. And you're thinking, wait a minute, there's still like 5 minutes left in this episode. What do the writers do? No. And so it turns to the kids, and the kids look at Ted, their dad, and go, Dad, you know you've always loved Aunt Robin. It's been like 10 years since Mom has passed. You need to go get Aunt Robin. And you're sitting there going, what the F? Are you seriously telling me right now that everything that this show has been based on has just been basically left like on the floor and stomped on a bunch of times? And then he goes back to that restaurant and he grabs that blue French horn, and then he goes over and I just wanted to cry, basically. I wanted to cry, just utter cry. I think I did. And the crazy thing is that I've tried so many times to restart that show. Like, we go between that and The Office. Right now we're binge watching The Office like over and over again, because that show will never. If you want to see a good ending to a show, you binge watch The Office. That show is amazing. But that's going to be another topic of another show of amazing endings to shows, which takes me to probably the one that I enjoyed the most was 6 Feet Under. That show that had the best ending of any show I've ever seen in my entire life. That show just blew everything out of the water. So when I'm sitting there and I'm watching, okay, you went back with Robin after all of this? Seriously? I mean, I just gotta step away. So 6 Feet Under, I'll just talk a little recap about how a show should end. So this was an HBO show that was in the early 90s, if I remember. And it had an amazing cast. I mean, just amazing cast. Michael C. Hall was probably the one that stuck out for me the most, but I'm a little obsessed with Derek, so that was kind of it. But Michael C. Hall, who played David Fisher, sister Claire Fisher, who was played by Lauren Ambrose, and their older brother Nate Fisher, who was played by Peter Cross, were basically grew up as a family that ran a mortuary with their mother, Ruth Fisher, who was played by Frances Conroy. And then it talks about the story arcs of falling in love and loss and death. And I thought what was amazing about that show was the fact that every single show, that how it started was how the person died. And they came up with these creative and shocking ways to shock you on how they died. And then all of a sudden you look back and the show focuses on not how they died, but how they lived. And so the very end of it, I don't want to get too much into it because I have other things, but you find out that the person that had probably the biggest growth in the show was the older son, Nate Fisher, played by Peter Krause, ends up dying an untimely death. It was unexpected, and it just really punched you in the gut, and it just left everybody heartbroken. And so the family comes together to mourn the loss, and it talks about, you know, basically the life of the, it just turns into basically another episode, but it's not. You just have to watch it. It's amazing. It started in 2001 and it ran to 2005. I honestly, remembering back, I thought that there was more seasons to the show, but I guess there wasn't. It's a little hard to get back into, but it is highly recommendable to go back and watch that show. It is absolutely stunning. But the way that that series ended was it recapped every single main character on till the day they died and showed how they died. So it was flash forwards of every character. So you find out how the mother dies, how Ruth dies, how old she was when she died. And then it talks about David Fisher dying. And then Brenda Chenoweth, played by Rachel Griffiths, how she died. And then, I mean, it's just beautifully, it was so beautifully done. And the last one, if I remember correctly, and it's been years since I've seen it, was probably the last person to pass on was Claire Fisher, which was the youngest character on the show. She was the youngest daughter, and it just did such a beautiful job of showing you the absolute ending of every loose end, tied up so nicely and in such a way. And it was done in this kind of sped up flash forward sequence visually, and with soft visuals. Everything was like painted really soft and glowy, kind of like a angelic kind of halo effect. And then it was set to this really beautiful song, and I'm kicking myself for not remembering it, but oh, it just played out so well. And so when you just think of that instead of thinking of the ending of How I Met Your Mother, because I don't know what they were thinking when they ended that show. It just boggles your mind. But another show, thinking, because I'm looking at Michael C. Hall right now, that kind of bugged a lot out of me was the show Dexter. Now, Dexter was an amazing show. I think I might be a little biased because I'm talking about shows that I absolutely loved who disappointed you greatly. But Dexter was a really amazing show. Just amazing. It was played by Michael C. Hall, who was a blood splatter analyst working for the LAPD, I think. Miami. It was not LA, it was Miami. So the show ran from 2006 to 2013, and he played a blood splatter analyst working for the Miami Police Department solving crimes. But what you do is you find out that he's actually a serial killer, but it's justifiable by the fact that he only murders murderers. That was a mouthful. I hope you guys all understood that. But he was found after a tragic murder of his mother in a trailer. I think it was a drug cartel of some kind when he was a baby. And so that massively affected him when he grew up, and he started to kill small animals. He was adopted by the sheriff's officer that found him. And so this officer, played by, oh gosh, who was he played by? Amazing, amazing actor. He basically took him under his wing and raised him as his own. He adopted him. And so when it was played by James Remar, his name was Harry Morgan. on the show. That was the character's name. And he brought Dexter up with a code of ethics. Listen, you're going to be a murderer. I can see it. But these are the things that you have to live by. These are the rules. It's like Zombieland and the rules, you know, double tap, all that stuff. You have to adhere by these rules if you want to keep the monster at bay from doing anything negative. And so he ends up meeting Deborah Morgan, who is Harry Morgan's biological daughter, who is his stepsister in the show. They both become their career choices, both went into the police department. She was a police detective, so that was the story arc of that. He ends up having these romantic relationships with, Julia Benz played one of his love interests on the show, Rita Bennett, who ends up getting murdered. I mean, the list of cameos in this show was phenomenal. Colin Hanks was in it. Courtney Ford was in it. John Lithgow was in it. Jimmy Schmitz was in it. Keith Carradine was in it. I mean, you name it. It just goes on. Johnny Lee Miller. Was he in that? I'm sorry. It's just so many amazing cast members in this show. And it ran it for 8 seasons. The show was amazing. It took a turn. It took a really big turn, and I think it started to go a little wonky as soon as, I want to say in the 6th or 7th season, Jennifer Carpenter's character, Deborah Morgan, ends up finding out that she has romantic feelings for her brother, her basically adopted brother, Dexter Morgan. And he has kept the secret from her to protect her for such a long time, even though the whole cat and mouse game was really crazy, because they're basically trying to hunt down the serial killer, which is Dexter. And so this cat and mouse chase was left and right and just intense and really pulled you into the show. And then all of a sudden, the writers decided that, I guess since Michael C. Hall and Jennifer Carpenter had a romantic relationship in real life and they eventually got married, that the awkwardness of being an audience member and knowing that this brother and sister team, even though they're not blood related, are technically married on the show, as an audience member, it was a little hard sometimes to break through the kind of awkward feeling you had of looking at these two characters. And then when they decided to embrace the fact that they were going to have them together, and I don't know if they had this written in before they actually romantically got involved, which could have been a thing, I don't know. But what ends up happening is Dexter gets this one character that he was going to kill, and I think it was a hard chase, gets him into, I think it was an abandoned church, and goes to kill this person. And Deborah comes in to basically, I think it was to profess her romantic intentions with Dexter. And she witnesses him killing someone. And that completely changes the complete dynamic of the entire thing. She's torn on the fact that she doesn't know if she loves him as much as she thought she did, or she could still, you know, romantically love him or even love him as a family now that she knows that he is a killer, because she doesn't know that it was her dad who taught him the ways of what he does, which makes it kind of acceptable in some way. So they end up getting together, and it's just really this weird, awkward moment. And then the climax of the basically the end last season, before the series finale, was the fact that Deborah Morgan was killed. She dies. And Dexter is so broken by this loss that he ends up going and taking Deborah's body. It was during, I think it was a hurricane was showing up on Miami Beach, and so everybody was being evacuated from a hospital. And Dexter takes Deborah's body and puts her on his boat, which he uses to go out into basically the sea and dispose of all of these dismembered body parts of all of these people that he've killed. And so you're thinking to yourself, he's going to the sunset, because the last visual you see before it cuts to black is him on the boat driving out into face first into this gigantic gray black cloud where the storm is coming. Like, you know, it's a metaphor of like what's to come. And so he decides to take whatever way out, and he just goes straight into it. Cut to black. At least that's what you think anyways. And then, for some very weird reason, it cuts to a flash forward of him, I think at a lumber yard, if I remember correctly, and with a kind of a beard and flannel and just like the whole nine yards. He's doing some manual labor type of job, and it looks like he's somewhere in Alaska, somewhere really rural that you're not going to be able to tell where he's at. And I gotta give the writers that, because of the fact that they did leave it for a potential for coming back to it a later date. Because I think if they would have just ended it with him driving off into the sunset, it would have just... But for some reason, that ending of that show just... There was something wrong with it. It just didn't seem genuine. As soon as they had that established romantic relationship between Dexter and Deborah, it felt forced, and it felt like it was something that didn't fit. And then they killed her, which would have been adequate if that was how you're going to write off his character. It gives him a cause and a reason to not want to, you know, to basically end himself and then end the show. It would have been better. But the fact that they had him kind of just like, oh, by the way, he's not here, he's here. It just was like some weird tacked on afterthought. And the way it was kind of shot, it did really visually kind of give you the feeling like it was tacked on. Like maybe they had tested it for audience and the audience didn't like the fact that it wasn't open-ended and they just slapped it on. It was just something that kind of drove me a little batty. But man, Michael C. Hall's character, like the way he played that character was so good, and it was really a very nice contrast between his Fisher character in 6 Feet Under. I mean, he still had some similar mannerisms and kind of quirks, but his confidence in it was just amazing. He was such a confident person that he knew that a serial killer would be, because they would be confident in the fact that they could kill someone and get away with it. So it was very believable. And the storylines and the way that he killed them and the way that he staged the scene, because he knew splatter like trajectories and basically how, I mean, the writing of the show was excellent. I don't know what happened. It seemed to just really veer off course for some reason, but I don't know, that I had my hopes up because there were some rumblings and rumors that they might actually come back and redo the show and like basically advance his storyline, which I was really hoping for. Honestly, I just really wanted to see him in Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and I'm really upset that I didn't get to see that, because I would love to see Michael C. Hall in some sparkly thigh-high boots, because I think that would be amazing. But there's always hope. I mean, shoot, like Stephanie Myers kept saying she wasn't going to finish the last Twilight book, the revision of the fact that it was supposed to be an Edward's perspective, and guess what ended up happening like 15 years later. So another show, which is a very contentious show and very, very hard to follow, is the lovable Game of Thrones. I'll give you guys a second, because I know some people are probably screaming because they remember the way this series ended. But let's get into it a little bit. Let's get in and dig a little deeper about Game of Thrones. So Game of Thrones is an amazing show. It was a Sunday night ritual that I would go over to my friend's house, and we would watch Game of Thrones. There's 8 seasons of this. It started in 2011. And I think the first like 6 seasons, it was a ritual of going to my friend Sarah's house. She had a theater in her house, and we would sit down and put it on. And it was just a to-do. And you get these whiplash storylines, and you could never get committed to a character, even a main character, and then embrace it and then find out that it's just So this show was based off of a George R. R. Martin best-selling books, A Song of Ice and Fire. And so this show ran from 2011 to 2019. And the way that the show originally started was the fact that it was clearly and very closely from what I am told, because I have not read any of the books, unfortunately. I tried to get into it, but the storylines were just too difficult. You really got to sit down and focus to really kind of, and I listened to it on audiobook, so that probably didn't really help. But it talks about the struggle of power and lust and love and family obedience, and I mean, you just name it, dragons and naked women and lots of sex in the very first season. It's just very, very shocking. Very shocking. So you have Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys Targaryen. And then you have the Stark family, Sansa Stark, played by Sophie Turner. Then you have Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow, who is basically the son, but not biologically. You have Maisie Williams, who plays Arya Stark. I love her. And then you have the family members of the Lannister clan, which is a feuding kind of clan. Cersei Lannister ends up actually marrying Robert. Oh gosh, what's his name? Robert, he was a king. And the whole family lusted for power. There was Cersei Lannister and Tyrion Lannister, played by the amazing Peter Dinklage. Cersei Lannister was played by Lena Headey. Headey. There's no L in that, Liz. And then there's the story. There's a million storylines. My mother asked me one day. She said, "Liz, could you explain to me the storyline of Game of Thrones?" And I said, "Mom, do you have 5 hours?" And I had to keep stopping to explain the different storylines visually because of how they ran visually in the show compared to the books. I mean, it was very hard to follow. I had to really kind of rein it in. I mean, I started watching the show, and I remember coming home one day, and my husband's read the first couple books. And so it was, I want to say, definitely within the first couple seasons. And he asked me, "Have you seen The Red Wedding? Where are you at in the show?" He doesn't watch the show, so he was asking me where it was at. And so I said, "Well, Robb Stark just married this girl," and so he stops and he goes, "Oh, so you've seen The Red Wedding?" And I go, "Well, yeah, they got married, so I'm assuming that's The Red Wedding." He proceeds to tell me what actually happens in The Red Wedding, which I was not prepared for because that was actually going to be the next episode, and I didn't know. And those of you who've not seen The Red Wedding, it's basically a mass murder of a large portion of the Stark family as they were portrayed or betrayed by a rival. Not necessarily a rival. I mean, it's just back and forth. We've got Bran Stark, who's seeing these visions after he's pushed out of a window by oh gosh, the Kingslayer. Oh gosh, Jaime Lannister. Now here, I mean, it's a whiplash, I'm telling you. So Jaime Lannister is the brother of Cersei Lannister. They are in love. They end up actually having several children together who are eventually all killed. And one of them, who plays a really crazy mad king, King Joffrey, played by Jack Gleeson, who is amazing. I still have the visual of his death in the back of my head, like it's seared there. Like you can't, the visual effects, the CGI, what they did there, kudos to you, kudos. But they were, in the first season, they were madly in love, and they got caught by Bronn Stark, who was a young boy climbing into a tower. He pushes them out of a tower. He's then paralyzed, and then he like eventually has to go on this long journey because the Lannisters end up basically going, into this fight with the Stark family. It's just, I mean, don't even, and then you don't even get to the Targaryen family. So Daenerys Targaryen is the daughter of the Mad King, who went insane, in which Jaime Lannister was the head of his, basically his army, and he was doing all these brutal things, and so Jaime Lannister ended up killing the Mad King, which was actually justifiable because of what he was doing to his own countrymen. And then you look at what he did, and you can tell that he's a redeemable character. And his story arc was probably one of the best ones on the show, because he went from being such a evil person of pushing this small boy almost to his death out of a tower because he got caught for watching him have sex with his sister, to actually going out of his way to kind of building this relationship with Brenna of Tarth, who's played by Gwendolyn Christie, who is beautiful and amazing. I'm sorry, I just love her to death. She's an amazing actress. But he builds this lovely story arc, and when you get to the end, you're kind of hoping that since they've have redeemed him for all the bad things that he has done, and they did so very successfully in the writing of the show, but yet at the end, he ends up going back and dying with his air quote real love of his life, Cersei Lannister, which is not a very far stretch, but as an audience member, you just kind of get crushed. So there's really no way of preparing you how the last season went, other than the fact that you find out that the person who's going to save the day is either one of a couple people. You've got Bran Stark, you've got Jon Snow, and you've got Daenerys Targaryen, Mother of Dragons. So she's got these dragons. She ends up going through her kingdom. She gets sold actually by her brother to Khal Drogo, who's played by Jason Momoa. And she ends up getting forced into this relationship because she finds this female empowerment. It's not even female empowerment, just her own power. She finds herself and she knows everybody's betrayed her. She's only got herself that could save her. So she basically embraces the suck and she kind of falls in love with Khal Drogo. And he has, unfortunately, an untimely death. He ends up getting hit in the head and going into like a coma state. And she ends up finding out that she's pregnant at this time. And she does this kind of black magic trying to bring back Khal Drogo, which she ends up actually making her lose the child. And she loses Khal Drogo anyways. And so she's got all this loss in her life. And she goes on this mission to not only guide her people, because she has to take this responsibility now because her husband's dead, and she's got to rise up. And so she travels the land and she finds these basically aristocratic people that have enslaved this whole nation. She frees them with her dragons. You find out she's got dragons that she can fly. It's just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. And so you've got all these story arcs. There's a battle between the Lannisters and the Starks, and everybody's killing everybody, and everybody's betraying everybody. And then you've got Jon Snow's character, who is sent to the Wall, which is kind of a place. I don't know what to call it. It's very hard to explain what the Wall is, but it's basically the wall between one side of the land and the other. And there's this evil force over there called the Nightwalkers, who basically, once you die, bring you back to life as a zombie. This show has everything in it. I cannot tell you how much stuff is in the show. And so, going into the final season, you start to love all these characters. You get to experience their loss. Even though all these characters are dying, just when you get attached to them, they eventually die. So you very learn a lot very quickly on the fact that you cannot get attached to a certain character. And my problem, and what drove me probably insane the most, was Tyrion Lannister, because I just loved his character. Like, I couldn't lose him. As long as everybody could be fine and gone, and Arya Stark, I'm sorry, I really did love her too, but as long as they survived, I was okay with it. But I mean, they did this really crazy story arc of the fact that Jon Snow dies. He's assassinated by his own men on the wall when he takes leadership, and they don't, this one guy believes he's not leading them the correct way, so they kill him just to be brought back by, I think it was the Red Queen. I don't remember her character's name. But I just, Melisandre brought her back, who's played by Carice Van Houten, who's amazing and beautiful. And I'm sorry, this is getting way too long-winded. So they go into the final season. Now, take in mind the fact that George R.R. Martin has only written and established several books. And by the time they get into the last, I think, two seasons, the writing of the show is actually past the books. So a lot of the writing is coming from the writers. And from the information that I read is the fact that they did collaborate a lot with George R.R. Martin to get approval for the storylines that they were creating in the show. I would like to think that maybe he wouldn't have agreed. I don't know. He just kills everybody off, so it's not really a surprise that he would agree with the ending of the show. But just as the whole season comes to a climactic kind of point to where you know that they all have to join forces against the White Walkers, which they do, and then they defeat, thank you, Arya Stark, played by Maisie Williams. You are amazing. You have to watch the show. It was just epic. It was probably the highlight, the strongest highlight of the last season. So when she just jumping out as Bran is about to be murdered by the Night King, and she jumps out of the darkness and she's flying through the air with a knife in her hand, and she plunges it, and it has to be dragon glass. It's the only way to kill a White Walker. And so you just grab this glass, and she's just out of the darkness, and you're thinking to yourself, Bran's totally going to get killed and this sucks. She comes flying out with this knife and just boom, slow motion flying. Oh, it makes me want to scream right now because I was just like, oh my gosh, you are so cool. But so you eventually end up finding out through the last season, after you kind of get on board with the fact that Daenerys Targaryen is falling in love with Jon Snow, you then find out that they're actually related. That Daenerys Targaryen, even though they're very similar in age, is actually his aunt. Yeah, let that sit for a while. Let that kind of simmer in your mind. But the fact that they didn't know that kind of makes it okay. And you kind of look past it. And the fact that Jon's had a lot of hurt in his life too. You know, he eventually find out who his mother is, and that kind of leads to you finding out, since that's his mother, it's actually, he's never been to Eddard Stark, played by Sean Bean, who unfortunately, like pretty much everything else he's ever been in, is killed off way too soon. But the storyline starts off that Jon Snow was his bastard child, because he goes off to do this mission and then comes back with the child. But what you find out is that he comes back with his sister's baby, who was in love with a Targaryen. So that's why Daenerys Targaryen is Jon Snow's aunt. It is just like a web of, it's just a web of, like, not lies, but what a tangled web we weave. That's all I can say about that. So just when you get on board about them being together, all of a sudden, at the very beginning of the second to last season, which was season seven, they start changing Daenerys Targaryen's character. And she starts getting really angry. And she starts doing these things that are unlike her character that's been established over the course of basically seven seasons. And you start to think to yourself, is she going mad? I think she's going mad right now. Which would make sense, because her father went mad as well. And so you start thinking, okay, is this hereditary? Is she getting too drunk with power? What is going on? And then you have the Moral Compass, who is played by Jon Snow, who comes in and knows what is right from wrong. And the thing is that you could call Daenerys Targaryen crazy, but she doesn't think what she's doing is wrong. She actually thinks she's doing it for the benefit of the people. So there's this big epic scene where she's going in to basically fight Cersei Lannister, and they're begging her not to go in. They're saying, hey, if they drop their weapons and they basically kind of give up, you will be saving thousands of lives. Let's not go in and attack. But as soon as she gets up there on her dragon and she's flying around, and you're thinking everything might be right, everything might be good, she just flips a switch and then commands her dragon to start laying waste and kills everybody. Not only that, but she's actually killing some of her own men, but she don't give an F. She's just killing everybody, just left and right. And so there's this epic final scene where half of the throne room is kind of burnt down. And so when you walk in, you get this visual of this light coming through, and you see this throne at the end of this long hall, this big, huge room, and there's no wall behind it. Pretty much three-fourths, like three walls of the room are completely gone. And so she walks in, and she's touching the throne, and she's looking at it. And she goes to kind of get up onto it and take her place, rightful place on the throne. And then Jon Snow walks in. And he's walking in, and you could tell in his face, in his demeanor, that something's going to happen. I will recommend, there is a video on YouTube. It was one of the things that they attached for special features. It was the last table read that just recently came out of Game of Thrones. And you should see the look on Kit Harington's face when he finds out he kills Emily Clark. And Emily doesn't look like she's like really that shocked. So part of me thinks that she'd already like read it, so she knew what was going on. But Jon Snow slowly walks in, and he walks up to Daenerys Targaryen to embrace her. And she's basically like, we've got everything we wanted, we can rule now. But he knows that if he lets her live, she's going to kill so many people. She basically says that. He's like, okay, we're done. And she goes, no, we're not done. We're going to do this and this and this. And so Jon knows he has to do what he has to do. And he takes his sword. And then it's a close-up shot of them embracing from like bust. It's the bust. So like the shoulders up. And then you can see the life drain kind of out of her face. And then Jon starts to cry and embrace her. And he lays her out to die. And then her dragon comes up. And you're thinking to yourself, oh shit, John is going to be a crispy critter. He's totally going to die. And the dragon comes up and he flaps and all the wind's coming. And John kind of bows his head like he's waiting for it to happen. And he knows what he did is unforgivable. And he's kind of embracing death. And instead the dragon turns and just spits fire on the throne and then flies away. And it makes it appear to be somewhat symbolic on the fact that you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so symbolic on the fact that like absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's basically what happened. But I did read in an article that that actually wasn't the writer's intention when he had the dragon actually shoot fire on the throne. And so I'm like, well, what else could that mean? that literally is not how it goes. And so then it kind of just, after that, just goes, okay, so everybody is going to go their separate ways. And they basically build this kind of cliffhanger ending for Arya Stark, because there was rumors that she was going to have a spinoff show. And like, it was just like, okay, everybody just kind of wiped their hands with it, clapped their hands and said, okay, that was fun, guys, bye. And then just everybody left. It's like, what's the point of making you love this character, this redeemable character that supposedly is going around like freeing slaves and just doing all these rightful things for all these people that are embraced her, just to find out that she, in the end, she actually enslaves them, doesn't really give them their freedom, kills half of them because she's angry. They turned her character on a dime, and you're sitting there going, what the F? Like seriously? Just kill Cersei. And the crazy thing is that you, like, here's Jaime Lannister coming and fighting back just to get back to Cersei, and they end up dying in a cave-in. Like, they get cornered in a cave in one of the tunnels under the castle, and it just gets caved in, and then Tyrion walks in trying to find his brother, who was the only person who ever stood up for him in his entire life, because he had, you know, He was a little person in this world that wouldn't accept him. It was the only love that he had, and then they freaking killed him off by embracing the one person who tried to kill him and tried to, like, you know, shunned him and banished both of them. And it was just such a letdown. It was such a letdown. Oh my gosh. And it just bummed. It really bummed me out. But I mean, I guess that's what happens when you really don't have a kind of script to go by. You kind of just, it could get in the weeds a little bit. I think they probably went a season too long. And I know they broke up the last two seasons to stretch it out. And there was literally, it felt like a 2-year wait for the, I know it wasn't actual 2 years, but it felt like a very long wait just to even get into the last season. I think the last season had 6 episodes in it. And then the one before that had 8. It was very, very short. And so for them to try to pack as much closure with that many loose ends to tie in such a short period of time is what did them in. They didn't have ample time to really focus on the writing and really filter it out. So it pissed off a lot of people. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like an autistic boy holding a snow globe closing, or like, you know, the ending to Lost, or, oh God, The Sopranos. I cannot tell you how many times I hopped on the internet trying to find a copy of the original ending of The Sopranos to make sure that it was actually ending to a complete cut to black. But don't even get me started on that one. That's a whole nother discussion. But the last topic I would like to talk about is basically the ending to the show True Blood. Now, this one for me is kind of a sore spot. Now, this is another show that I kind of had fallen in love with after the show started. I think Dexter was the only one I actually watched from the beginning out of all the shows I've mentioned tonight. All the other shows, I was a good, I want to say How I Met Your Mother, I was 2 seasons behind when I got into that show. 6 Feet Under, I was like a good 3 seasons behind, which is nice because you can binge watch, you know, them back to back. But some shows, and I've discussed this last time, some shows are just not made to be watched back together, like back to back. They have to really, and I think a lot of new shows are doing this, but really start writing to binge watching criteria. Because if you space out a show weekly, it's okay in that you start overlooking certain things. Like when I went back and binged watched ER, which was one of my all-time favorite shows of all time, and they have 15 seasons of ER, and it's 25 episodes each season. So it took me a year to catch up on that show. And it started to grate after a while because you find out in the writing style, they'll start to establish some types of visual patterns and it gets kind of stale. It's kind of the issue that I had with Ozark that I talked about last time. Yeah, that's why it's kind of hard to get into a show that you get invested in, especially if it was made for television and not for live streaming, because it's difficult because it's structured different. I do see it changing a lot though. Especially with all these streaming services like Hulu and Netflix, they put more focus on trying to create something that is more blendable easily when watched all together. And I think writing has kind of changed as well to kind of focus on that on some shows. I just recently binged watched Kimmy Schmidt off of Netflix the other day. And they have this really great interactive episode. It was kind of like create your own storybook. They had done an episode like that, I want to say a year ago, which was very successful. And so they redid it with Kimmy Schmidt, and I must have watched that thing 5 times and did different scenarios. And so it's really fun to see that people are actually, with writing, trying to add a little bit of dimension and focusing a little bit on the writing style as to create it as a whole. So if you watch it back to back, you're not really going to get tired of it. And I think when they actually have different directors come on to the show
and direct different shows that are together, I think it's a lot more successful. And when you watched it in a scenario to where you're watching it back to back, because you've got, even though the storylines are still the same and the arc is still the same and the writing is similar, but the way it's directed, it doesn't all come to you at once as one kind of repeated segment. But I mean, like all the older shows that are posted online, it's just kind of difficult to watch in a binge-worthy kind of setting. So, that's just how it goes. But what I'm thinking though is one of the things I really want to kind of talk about is Lost. But unfortunately, I did not get into that show until later on. It started in 2004. It ran for 6 seasons, and the cast is amazing. Unfortunately, I didn't get into the show until around 2000. Sorry, it started 2001, I think 2001, and sorry, I've got to double check that. And it ran for 6 seasons. And let me just recap really quickly what I know of the show. You've got these people, they're on a plane. The plane crashes, they're on an island. They get kidnapped a couple times, crazy things happen. They survive. Then they realize after they get back to the mainland that they are actually all dead when they meet up at a church. It's very strange. It's one of the shows that my friends tell me is the one that they probably had the most problems with the ending in recent years. So I'm thinking I'm going to go back and binge watch that one and then come back with a synopsis on it or a review, because I really don't know if I can get through it. But it's got so many, Matthew Fox is in it, and he was on Vampire Diaries. Why do I not know? I still have a hard time pronouncing his name. But it's one of those shows that actually did a really good job of keeping things fast paced through what I saw. And like I said, I've only seen the last 2 seasons of the show, but for getting that invested in a short period of time, I mean, it's got to be a well-written show. Oh, I just remember the one scene of the guy sacrificing himself in the water, and he's in that, his friend's in the chamber, in airtight chamber, and he sacrifices himself and he puts his hand on the window. Oh, just makes me misty-eyed. But so that's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to start binge watching Lost so I can come back and talk about it, because I have this motto that not everybody agrees with, but I don't feel as though you could talk poorly about a show or about anything unless you've experienced it or have seen it. It seems to be something that's a little hard for me to handle. And like, for example, the fact that after I watched the movie La La Land, I had come home and I had mentioned to my significant other that I thought that La La Land was the best show I had ever seen. And so I have been mercilessly tormented about saying that. Yes, I have seen The Godfather. And yes, I have seen a lot of other things. No, I have not seen Citizen Kane, so that's another close one that I probably need to watch. I didn't say it was the best show ever made. I just said it was the best show I have ever seen. So, but, to each his own. And my argument being is the fact that the person I was talking about this with has not seen the film. So it was a tense conversation about whether or not you could legitimately complain about a movie that you or a TV show you have not seen. And I don't think you should or could. I mean, you can look at a trailer and think to yourself, I'm not going to like this movie. And then you can watch it and then decide that you don't like the movie. Feel free to talk as much smack about that movie or film or TV show after you've seen it. You got to give it a chance. I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. So thanks, guys. I will see you guys later on the flip side. Bye.